Welcome to the 2006 ARMA International Conference and Expo podcast. This podcast is powered by PodTech and sponsored by NextPage, the provider of powerful document tracking and retention software.
There's a little bit of Enron in all of us, that we all have the potential to recognize that we have demands on our finances, and we have family, we have elderly parents, we have kids in private school, we have mortgages.
I'm here with Lynn Brewer, the author of Confessions of an Enron Executive. Welcome to the podcast, Lynn.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
This is fun. In fact, the Enron case just completely opened almost the entire world's eyes on compliance and records management. What was your role at Enron?
I was recruited about 3 years before the implosion of Enron to head up a risk management group inside the legal department that would brief for senior management and the board of directors these off-the-balance sheet partnerships at the center of the scandal.
And so I imagine you had a lot of interesting risk assessments.
Actually, it's interesting because, as I've often said, it always comes down to the records. And that was that I discovered within about 6 months of my employment bank fraud to the tune of $250 million based on records that the company had filed that contradicted the loans that they had taken out from Bank of New York and Nations Bank. I think that the biggest thing that, you know, quickly set the tone for me within the culture was when I discovered this bank fraud. I went to my supervisor and said, you know, we have a bit of a problem. And she said, what is that? I said, well, the gas securing this loan doesn't exist. And she said, oh, just leave that out of your brief. So it wasn't so much about, you know, destroying documentation. It was just simply turning a blind eye towards the information that I had. And of course, you know, I, like most of the executives, were getting, you know, plenty of money off of stock options, you know. And so there was this motivation to look the other way for the financial benefit of stock options, which in many cases and many ways makes me no different than Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling, unfortunately, but it speaks to the culture that was rampant at Enron.
What about the current laws that are in place today, Sarbanes-Oxley, and all the other things that have been set up since Enron? Do you feel like they're a good gate or a good rope off for companies in the future?
Well, one of the things I talked about today with respect to the records management group was that in the year that Enron imploded in 2001, there was about a half a whistleblowing report to the Securities and Exchange Commission for every public company. And 2 years after the passage of Sarbanes-Oxley and 3 years after the failure of Enron, the whistleblowing reports had escalated to 51 whistleblowing reports every month per public company. So basically there are 40,000 whistleblowing reports every month, which means that there's a whole lot of things going on inside corporations, and needless to say, there are records reflecting that, and there's going to be some pressure to, you know, subjugate the rules and, you know, go beyond what they should be doing, and that's going to fall on the records management folks.
Any advice you have for them as they uncover these things, or they're trying to get pressure from a boss or a senior management member?
Well, first of all, with the federal sentencing guidelines that have changed since, sort of simultaneously with the Enron implosion, it means that people will go to prison relative to the amount of damage caused. So if records retention policies are not clear and communicated throughout the company, then it can create risk for a company. I think that it's important to note that while most risk managers don't delve into the content of the document itself, those people who have sought to destroy documents, certainly there's an indication that the documents have information that, you know, if they're asking things to be destroyed, then, you know, it might create some problems.
So what do you see coming in the next 2 to 3 years? Is there a forecast you see based on your past history and your book and your research?
Well, I think we're now beginning to see it appear in stock options, the backdating of stock options. And so, you know, one of the things that companies need to get to is this concept of a single version of the truth, you know, that they understand the metadata that's out there and the DNA of their companies. I've started the Integrity Institute since leaving Enron, and we measure corporate integrity on a quantitative level versus qualitative, you know, and we look at risk relative to how data is stored and how it is transferred, because we believe that's the key indicator as to risk within a company. Not necessarily the typical risk assessment that's required under Sarbanes-Oxley or risk and insurance, but really how does a company store its data? Is it respectful of data privacy and all of those issues that are becoming so important to all of us?
Any case histories or any insight you want to share with someone who's trying to put together their records management practice?
Well, I think that obviously ARMA, with their best practices, has their finger on the pulse day to day of those things. And I think that unfortunately what happens in many corporations is that people that are making personnel decisions don't understand the level of expertise that's really required to do this job right. And reduce risk for the company. They simply sort of assume it's a file clerk position, and that's clearly, we're way beyond that. Information management people today have to know the latest technology and what to look for. I mentioned today a website called internalmemos.com where any employee can post internal memos that they have on a public website. And so you see all sorts of things, trade secrets being revealed out on the website. So thinking that you can protect data with the internet today is just not reality. And so transparency really has to begin from within. And that transparency begins with really good systems and tools and technology.
So a lot of this is not necessarily technology. It's a cultural thing.
Absolutely, it's a cultural thing. I used the example today, unfortunately, of Coca-Cola, where they have consistently done things that have brought them to the light of their stakeholders now, to the point that they trade at what they did 10 years ago, simply because they're taking market studies and falsifying results and passing them off, and then they're getting to the accounting department, and the accounting department is seeing things differently. And, you know, I mean, it always comes down to the records. It always comes down to the records. And unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, ethics will never keep up with technology because of the, you know, just the advances that are made on a daily basis. You know, you look at the CEO of Boeing. He signs a purchase order that allows emails to be viewed, you know, for issues such as trade secrets being revealed, and we suddenly see that his own emails are being scanned, and suddenly his, you know, illicit affair is revealed and he's fired. So it goes on and on and on, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that the tone does start at the top, and it has to create the culture that looks at the preservation of records and information and data and, you know, all of that.
Your institute, is there anything that you have to share about success from that so far?
Well, it's a long haul, I think is the best way to put it. There are companies out there that are really doing great things in a lot of areas. And unfortunately, you know, especially with the latest scandal with the stock options, I mean, you begin to look at companies like Apple, who are suddenly in this dilemma of having to justify backdating stock options when many, many, many companies do it as a result of, you know, employment offers and that kind of thing. They will backdate offer letters. And so, you know, recognizing these companies that are doing the right thing and are doing great things for the integrity that they do have, and they should be recognized and they should be, you know, promoted, and that's what we really want to do at the Integrity Institute, is become the good housekeeping seal of approval. Meanwhile, out there in the marketplace, you have short sellers, so you have brokers who are loaning out your stock certificates that you don't have to other people so they can drive stock prices down. I mean, it's a very different world, you know. And, you know, at the forefront of that is the information management and data retrieval and all of that.
What about the smaller companies out there that aren't trading on the market that are faced with this dilemma? as well. Is there any insight you'd give to the smaller organization that's trying to put together a practice?
Well, I think that what we're learning is, you know, even with small companies who want to at some point be acquired by a large company, the large companies are going to look at them and they're going to look at their processes they have in place. And if they're looking for short-term gains in order to sell the company, they're going to be looked at as an Enron. And so it's just easier to start out right. And, you know, for small companies, I mean, you know, use the resources of ARMA to help you build that practice right from the first start. You know, I just spoke with somebody today who used to be with Vinson and Elkins and is now with a small energy company, and she said, we're doing great things there. And that's so important to do these great things even as a small company.
So how's it been being an author?
Well, it's been at times challenging. I think that both good and bad, in the sense that your life is no longer your own. You know, I don't really have a private life anymore. Or at least it feels like that sometimes. But at the same time, I'm out speaking with people. And today we had a packed room, people sitting on the floor and awestruck, I think, in many ways, that to recognize that there's a little bit of Enron in all of us. You know, that we all have the potential to recognize that we have demands on our finances, and we have family, we have elderly parents, we have kids in private school, we have mortgages, we have car payments, that I think people say, you know, I probably would have done the same thing. And I think that's the message that I keep hearing back from people. How tough this must have been. And so to me, if I can keep one person from making a bad choice and ultimately ending up in prison, then I've done my job.
That's great. I appreciate the story. Appreciate your time here at the ARMA International Conference and Expo. Congratulations on your current success and your willingness to share that and help others. I think that's an amazing, I guess, internal change for you to be able to take what you've learned and turn it into something positive for the market.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
This ARMA International podcast was powered by PodTech and sponsored by NextPage. Visit ARMA on the web at www.arma.org for more information about NextPage and its desktop document retention solutions. Go to www.nextpage.com. This podcast was recorded and produced by Rocky Mountain Voices.